Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective. They post episodes on Monday and Thursday mornings bright and early. The latest one weighs in on concerns that players are sharing with the NBA's return to play, including how winning a title this year would affect LeBron's legacy. Be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective, as well as The Right Time, wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, Kyrie Irving, he really going to lead the revolution? We'll also talk about that change on The Bachelor you've been waiting on me to talk about. But first... All right, so yesterday, everything went a little haywire for Mike Gundy. Now, Gabe, did I tell you my Mike Gundy story from a couple months ago?
Which story is this?
All right, so after the world locked down, right? This is at the beginning of April. Gundy came out and made this crazy statement about COVID, and he was just like, we got to get these boys out here because the people of Oklahoma need this money and everything else and da-da-da. And I did a parting shot for Outside the Lines, and it was released on a Saturday morning. And it was just basically like, no, man, like you can't rush these kids out here if it's not going to be safe, right? Like he kind of gave lip service to safety at the time, but he seemed far more concerned with getting them kids out there than anything that had to actually do with them. It was about how they could serve everybody else. And so I kind of lit him up about that on a Saturday morning. Saturday afternoon, Oklahoma State put out an apology, right? Saturday afternoon, and this is just after I put something up on the internet. Now, did this happen directly because somebody at ESPN had something to say? I think it's entirely possible, right? And I just bring that up to tell you that apparently Oklahoma State has figured out that they need to get on top of stuff quickly when Mike Gundy says something that's a little bit ridiculous, all right? Fast forward to Monday, somebody puts a picture up on the internet of Mike Gundy in a t-shirt that is from something called the One America News Network. I'll be honest, I had not heard of the One America News Network until 2 months ago. I have to say, though, that like I was aware of them but didn't know who they were, which is to say that if you had been paying attention to the briefings that they used to have about the coronavirus, then the One America News people came up in that one. They were the outlet. When the press correspondents were taking turns on who would go into the briefing room, it was the One America News correspondent who went in when they were not supposed to and then said, oh, no, the president said that we were invited here. Like you go back and watch those briefings. The president really, really likes them. And when the president has fallen out with Fox News, he gets on board with One America News because they're kind of wired in the same way. Though, to be honest, this is an apolitical observation here. I don't know what your politics are. I don't know how you feel about any of these places, but I've done a little research on this. This is a fair characterization of One America News. It's like, what if Fox News wasn't so responsible? Like, that's what it is. No matter what you think about Fox News, that's what One America News is. Like, Abe, have you looked into any of their stuff?
When I first started hearing about One America News Network, the way I read it was not as One America News Network. It was as OWN.
Yeah.
And so then my brain started getting a little crossed with Oprah's News yes. Network.
Yes. They're a little different.
And I was just about to look up right now what Oprah's News Network.
It was OWN. Oprah Winfrey Network.
Easy to get confused here. Very, very, very different type of news.
Yes, yes, yes. They're doing something. But if you haven't, go to the One America News wiki page and it'll kind of sum you up and get you caught up on what their get down was. And so Gundy had that shirt on in the video, but I became aware of One America News 2 months ago from Mike Gundy, right? Like I was not really up on who they were. I wasn't up on what they do. I don't watch a lot of cable news, but this is what Mike Gundy had to say about One America News. He said that he was just one day at the crib, flipping channels, right? Flipping channels, and he came across One America News. And his description of One American News was, they just report the news. There's no commentary. There's no opinions on this. There's no left. There's no right. Look, there is absolutely left and right on that network, right? No matter what side of this you happen to fall on, there's absolutely left and right on this. Like, if Mike Gundy can watch that network and say to himself, this network doesn't have a slant, he is probably the only person watching that network who feels that way, because people who go to that network are going there because it has a slant, right? That's kind of the point of the whole thing. And the only conclusion that I can draw from Mike Gundy saying that he watches One American News and all they offer is facts is that Mike Gundy is a moron. Like, if he legitimately believes that, that is stupid, right? That, like, only a stupid person could say that. And I try to not, like, my boss, Eric Rodholm, he always makes the point on this. Characterize actions, not people, okay? And so I'm trying to be careful, because characterizing him as a stupid person is breaking that rule. But when somebody says something to you that is that incredibly stupid, I cannot assume that it's just a moment, right? Like, that, like, that's not the kind of stupid that you pop into and then pop out. Like, for example, I have made the point at a couple of junctures that it's, what if Stevie Wonder wasn't blind? Just what if, right? What if all those visual references in his music happened to be first person, right? What if he hadn't just heard? What if somehow he knew what a four-eyed girl on a TV screen looked like? You know? Maybe what he did, isn't she lovely? It's possible that he knew that she was actually lovely.
Did they or did they not give you a shout out on Billions with that?
It was.
I mean, Brian Koppelman.
Yeah, my man does the show, right? Like, come on now. You know, yeah. Because I hit him up. I was like, we do have a point. Thank you. But anyway, that's stupid, right? You may love everything that's on that network. I'm trying not to argue with you about your politics right now at this moment. But if you are going to tell me that there's no left, there's no right, they just offer facts, you're either stupid or crazy, right? There's no way around that. And then there's a third one that, you know, possible conclusion, a word that people don't like to say out loud. And for the moment, I'm not going to say it. I'm just going to tell you how that One American News Network shirt hit one of my Gundy's players. Is it Chuba or Chubba? I'm going to say Chuba because it's Hubbard, and Hubbard has two B's. That's the guess I'm going on. But anyway, picture got up a Gundy in the One American News shirt. Chuba saw that and was like, I will not stand for this. There are going to be changes here. Now, I understand he's the best player on the team. Might be the best running back in the country when we come back next year. Canadian kid, interestingly enough. He's like, nah, there's going to be changes. That is what he said. And then after he said there was going to be changes, other dudes popped up. They had this defensive back who was a Thorpe Award semifinalist last year. He had his thing to say. You had one player that was like, guys talking about being called thugs, right? Guys talking about being called ghetto, being threatened with getting sent back to the hood, getting sent back to South Dallas, right? All these things. And these are what players are talking about. And unlike the situation with Kirk Ferentz, who I do not think should still have a job, this stuff with Gundy is coming directly to him. They had a 2-year starter on the offensive line who popped up and was like, I stand with Chuba, and so does the whole offensive line. Justice Hill, who's now in the NFL, running back, was a really good player from Oklahoma State. He was like, y'all don't know the things that go on behind the scenes. This is what he had to say on Twitter. All this happened basically in like an hour and a half. All these guys were talking, and it wasn't about that shirt no more, right? In fact, I question whether it was ever really about the shirt, because no disrespect to Chuba, but like, how hip was he to One American News in the first place?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, if the causation was which came first.
This is what I think. I think that somebody told Chuba what was going on with the shirt, and then he connected that to whatever their experiences were on campus. And then he went from there, right? Like that's my guess. But when I say that this ain't about the shirt no more, it's about how those players feel. It's about how those players deal with Mike Gundy. It's about the trust level that they have, and the fact that apparently Gundy's doing a whole bunch of stuff that they're not putting up with anymore. At least they don't want to put up with anymore. So that seemed to happen. Now, I started this podcast by telling you that story about how quick Oklahoma State came around with that statement. Well, it didn't take them long in this case to come up with a video with Mike Gundy and Chuba Hubbard talking about, apparently, Gabe, they made peace. In 4 hours, in a span of 4 hours, apparently, Chuba felt the way that he felt. Mike Gundy got word. They had some kind of talk. I don't know if the talk was just with Chuba or with the whole team, but they had some kind of talk. And Mike Gundy says, it's going to be change.
That's like when you're getting ready to sue somebody and you come to a settlement.
Yeah.
Get out in front of the press conference and say, you know, everything's cool. Meanwhile, when you leave that press conference, you've got a bag of cash over your shoulder.
Yeah. Like, I want to know what happened in between the same way you do, right? Because, like, what it seems to me was they had whatever meeting it was, and point one that was made to Chuba was, you should have come to us first, right? Because in that video, he apologizes for the fact that he did not come directly to talk to Mike Gundy, that he decided to make this public. Now, never mind that Gundy 2 months ago made his affection for One America News public. Never mind that he wore that T-shirt in public. And by the way, I've had people make the argument, you know, who buys a news network T-shirt? I don't think Mike Gundy bought that T-shirt. I think One America News saw Mike Gundy talk about them 2 months ago and then sent them a shirt. And I feel that way because people send me like that all the time, right? You mess around and say something about them, they're like, oh, wow, visible person has said thing. Let's get him outfitted in a T-shirt, hoping for the day that I, or in this case, Mike Gundy, winds up on social media in a picture with that shirt on. And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And what's wild to me about it with Gundy, about the One America News thing, is I don't think he has any reason to believe that what's on that network is extreme. And look, I feel confident saying this. I ain't got no problem saying this in this space or anywhere else. You go look up that network and their content. It is extreme. There's no way around it. Like, I had people hitting me up. It's like, oh, would it be different if he was wearing a CNN shirt? Yes. In fact, it would. Would it be different if he was wearing an MSNBC shirt? Yes. In fact, it would. It would be different if he was wearing a Fox News shirt. Like, there, it's that far off, right? Like, it's that far in the other direction. Yes, it would be different under those circumstances. But the real issue here is the way that Gundy apparently treats his players. It's the way that his players feel that they are treated by him. And it seems very clear that a number of them feel as though he uses language with them that is obviously racially motivated. Obviously. Talk about sending these cats back to the hood and stuff like that. What else is that? Right? Now, I don't know how many poor white dudes they wind up with on the team. I have no idea. Right? But are they threatening to send them back to the country or whatever it is in the cases that those exist? Like, is that the language that's used with them? I would love to know, because I haven't heard any of these guys say that. So I'm inclined to believe that that sort of thing does not happen. And so I am not going to lie. I saw the video and they made Hubbard get up there and apologize for not coming straight to Gundy. And then they ended the video on top of Bubba Wallace's car. Oh, you want to go ahead and play the sound on that?
In light of today's tweet with the T-shirt I was wearing, I've met with some players and realized it's a very sensitive issue with what's going on in today's society. And so we had a great meeting and made aware of some things that players feel like that can make our organization, our culture, even better than it is here at Oklahoma State. And I'm looking forward to making some changes, and it starts at the top with me, and we got good days ahead.
I'll start off by first saying that I went about it the wrong way by tweeting. I'm not someone that, you know, has to, you know, tweet something to make change. I should have went to him as a man, and I'm more about action. So that was bad on my part. But from now on, we're going to focus on bringing change, and that's the most important thing.
There it is. You heard that dap. They leaned on Bubba Wallace's hood with that one. Drew Brees, an influencer. It was the white man and the black man. And by the way, credit to Mike Gundy. Apparently he has some relationship with his players, because that interracial dap, which is very often an awkward situation, came together smooth-like.
But I don't know how smooth it went through, because where the video conveniently cuts off is right after the bring it close.
Ah, yes.
Any white guy can bring it close. But can you snap it back?
Yeah.
That's the question.
That's a fair point.
And we didn't see it.
That's a fair point. Totally fair point. Totally fair point. It broke my heart watching the end of that video. It did. And I'm going to tell people why it broke my heart. And I had people in my mentions. It seems like it was a bot motivated thing. Like, oh, Bomani's mad that he didn't get to cancel Mike Gundy. Yo, if I want to myself cancel Mike Gundy, I can. I don't need everybody else to do it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think y'all know this is about me. I don't need the rest of y'all to follow me no damn where. Right? Like, I could do that. If I just want to cancel Mike Gundy, I can go ahead and cancel Mike Gundy. The reason that this broke my heart was you're never going to convince me that those players were in that place they were that afternoon and that just a couple of hours later, everything is okay. You're never going to convince me of that. Mike Gundy gets up and says, yeah, you know, it's a real sensitive time right now, you know, and what's gone over with my shirt. And he didn't apologize for the shirt. I don't even necessarily think that he should apologize for the shirt. But the issue stopped being about the shirt the second these other guys started talking about the ways that they had been treated. It immediately then became about this, the stuff that the strength coach at Iowa got fired for. That's exactly the stuff that they're saying that Mike Gundy was doing with these players. That's exactly what's going around that he was saying to these guys. It's the exact same stuff. And that the fact that in that video, Chuba Hubbard had to come in and apologize for saying something in public. No, what he did in public was bring to the forefront something that clearly these guys have been talking about in private for far too long. So now they're doing the same thing that Ferentz said. Well, we're going to institute some change. I learned some things from my players that I didn't know, and now we're going to institute some change. So like if you're Mike Gundy, because he didn't really say anything about the stuff the players had to say, right? You're going to keep threatening to send them back to the hood? You're going to keep calling them ghetto? Like what you going to do about that? Because what stood out in this also that was different, I think, than the Ferentz case and what was going on at Clemson. The people we heard from at Clemson weren't good players, right? We heard from walk-ons, by and large. What went on at Iowa, with like one exception of sorts, overwhelmingly, we heard, not overwhelming, that's not fair, because we heard from so many players from Iowa. But we heard a lot from players who weren't good. The stars at Oklahoma State feel this way. Right? Like even the best players apparently are either getting this treatment or this treatment is of enough proximity to them that it causes them a personal problem, that it causes them an issue. So I'm asking now, what's going to make Mike Gundy change? Right? Because the only thing that seemed to me that was going to make Mike Gundy change was a legitimate threat from these players because they got the juice now. They have the leverage now. If they want to make this happen, they can do it. And so after last week, we saw the players at the University of Texas say, these are our demands. We're not going to help recruit. We're not going to do any of this until you fall in line with these things that we want. That was bold. That was strong. They had concrete things that they wanted to work toward, right? They had all of that stuff right there lined up. These dudes, couple hours later, nah, we good.
Did they lose all leverage by doing that? Because that's what it seems like.
Nah, they still got it, right? Because if Gundy acts up again, the players always have the leverage. That's the thing. They always have the leverage because they're the reason everybody's here.
For people talking about like, oh, you're trying to cancel Mike Gundy. No, you're trying to hold him responsible.
Yes.
If someone doesn't call him out for what he's doing, then he's going to skate. The people who don't want you calling him out for what he's doing, they clearly don't see that he's doing anything wrong.
No, because they think two things here, right? One, there is no viewpoint that a white man has that we are not bound to respect. That's the big part that you got to get here, right? Is that as long as enough white people think something, then we got to honor it in public. That's the biggest thing I think that we get about him and the One American News Network. Because I had people hit me up, like, oh, so the problem is just that it's a conservative news outlet. And I asked, I was like, so how many of y'all are conservative and bristle at the idea of being called conservative? Because this goes beyond simply being conservative, right? And a whole lot of people pop up and be like, yeah, no, I hate that, da, da, da. And my question for them was, why do I have to ask you this? Why don't I know this? You know what I mean? Like, why don't I know this already? It's not hard to find, for example, people who are members of the Democratic Party who will say something bad about Antifa. There's no, you have no issue finding that. on the other side, factually speaking, I don't think you can deny this being the truth, that the people that are the extreme to the right, the people more toward the middle, have embraced them for the numbers, right? They're like, yo, we can't offend those people, right? Like, it has been determined that this group of people is someone that we cannot offend. And within their group, that nobody's willing to say anything to offend. And so you have all these people hit me up. So Mike Gundy's not allowed to have a different viewpoint. He is 100% allowed to have a different viewpoint. And Chuba Hubbard is allowed to look at his different viewpoint and be like, yo, what is this? Right? Because this different viewpoint is often antagonistic toward that man's very existence. That's what it comes down to on that. So that's part of it. One, we're bound to respect anything that enough white folks think is okay. Like, I have to acknowledge this. That's how we treat the Confederate flag. Like, for the longest, we treated the Confederate flag like, well, you know, it means something to those people because we are bound to respect whatever these white folks have to say, right? That is a big part of this and a big problem that we've got. And part of why I have a problem this win with Gundy is where we get to number two. Not only are you bound to give that man respect, but this is the biggest thing. When everybody starts talking about what can we do to change, right? I always talk to all these white people about this. You know, what can I do to help? Let me tell you what you can do to help. You ready? Stop giving white folks this benefit of the doubt. Because the reason that Gundy can exist, the reason that Gundy can wear that shirt and that Gundy can treat the players in the ways that the players are being described is that in the end, when he brings it back and says, hey, I learned about what's going on, but there's going to be change. Okay? Boom. Benefit of the doubt afforded. Right? You guys believe somehow, some way that this, what, 53-year-old man who has been coaching this team for how long, right? You somehow believe that all of a sudden that guy is just going to turn into somebody different because his players or one of his players apparently told him, you know, it kind of hurts my feelings when you tell me that you're going to send me back to the hood. What, that never dawned on you before? The point of that in the beginning wasn't to hurt their feelings, right? With the idea that hurting their feelings was going to reach some larger goal or make them perform better or whatever it is. But you're going to tell me that man didn't know that right now? That's you giving him the benefit of the doubt that is absolutely 100% not earned. That is 100% not deserved. You just think that dude's going to turn into somebody new just that fast. Did the same damn thing with Kirk Ferentz. With Kirk Ferentz, they get the strength coach out of there. They drag some students out to sit in front of everybody and say how they like Kirk Ferentz and how everything is okay. But somehow you're going to believe that this man been coaching this team for 20-something years and his right-hand man was out here being abusive to these players. And then suddenly these guys told him, hey, that's not cool. And now everything's going to change.
Is the assumption also, too, that folks like Ferentz and Gundy, just white football coaches and maybe white people in general, always have good intentions then?
They believe it's in part, A, they have good intentions. B, the feelings of these other guys don't actually, like, really matter. You know what I mean? So it's just like, did you watch the Lance Armstrong doc?
I did, yeah. I mean, we talked about it, yeah.
Yeah. When he talked about failing that drug test at the 99 Tour de France for cortisone. And he said they caught him. They're like, oh, man, what are we going to do? And then they looked for anything to get him off. And then what they ultimately found was that the steroid that he got caught for using was available in a cream that treated saddle sores. And they were like, boom, got it, saddle sores, right? They were looking for that thing. That's all they did. They were just always going in because everybody wanted Lance Armstrong still in the tour. They did not want to show that dirt. They did not want to admit that. The reality is we got to stop. And it's the same thing that happens with the cops, right? Most cops are good people. That's the benefit of the doubt that facts do not support. Because when the bad cops act up, the good cops are in line right behind them. Or, I don't know, are all those the bad cops? You see what I mean? And it all goes back to giving a benefit of the doubt. And the reason that all these things happen on autopilot in the way that they do is because of giving white folks the benefit of the doubt where it is not earned. Individually, it is rarely earned. And collectively, it is simply not earned. It is not deserved. And the people who decide whether these folks should get the benefit of the doubt is other white people. Like the ones who are not on the business end of any of this, they are the ones who decide, hey, he good. No, he didn't. I mean, leave it in me. I just can't see how you could coach a football team and be a racist. Do you know how many people are in charge of a bunch of black people and hate every single one of them?
And you don't even know Mike Gundy.
You don't even know him.
And yet you're sticking up for the man as if he's your brother.
Yeah, they're sticking up for him in many cases because he could be them. Like, think of how many people, like, OAN is going to another level, right? But think of how many people do and say things that are in line with these folks, and they have to give them cast the benefit of the doubt because they want somebody to give them the benefit of the doubt.
It could have been any of us.
Yes, exactly. And that's why you notice that. I've talked about this here. I've talked about this with all the other people, you know, all these different people I've talked to about, well, what can we do? I was like, the big thing about it is white folks got to be willing to stand in their like white people have to be willing to stand and be wrong. You have to be willing to stand and push beyond that defensiveness. Because the reality is, just as I, as a heterosexual male, have engaged in behavior certainly that did not treat women fairly and did not treat our members of the LGBTQ, I almost said community, but you know how I feel about that term, right? I'm certainly guilty at some point of thinking things, of saying things, and they probably aren't that far away because I'm going to get it wrong sometime. But if you tell me I'm getting it wrong, I got to stand there and take that because I'm the person that's getting it wrong, right? That's all me. I got to stand there and I got to live with that. White folks want to be able to do this stuff without nobody making them feel bad. Like, they want to be able to do this and go back and talk about what's happened. That's that thing that happened with Boston, where Boston finally, you know, the Red Sox. And they were finally like, yeah, what Torrey Hunter said is right, and we got to stop. They've been calling people at our stadium for who knows how long, right? That's like that. That's what they've been doing. Yeah, yeah, our bad. And I'm like, no, absolutely not. You're not getting by on this just with a my bad. You knew this was going on for decades. You knew this was going on when they were doing it to your own players. You knew this was going on when they were doing it to other players. Where the hell were you then, right? That's the hard part. Right? That's the part of the workout that gets you gains. That's the part when you pushing up the bar that gets tough and makes you stronger, is when you stand up and you go back to what you said before and you're like, yo, here's why we got that wrong. We got that wrong because the feelings of these racist white people at our stadium meant more than the dignity of the players on the field. And when you just write this off with a guy like Gundy and just let him show up and be like, well, we're going to have some change. You go measure that change by whether or not those powerless players say anything about it, ignoring how much courage it took for them to say something about it right now. And if they wind up being quiet later, you're going to be like, oh, everything's okay. And then you know what you're going to do? You're going to give Mike Gundy the benefit of the doubt. That's what you're doing. When that stuff happens at Fenway, what winds up happening? The benefit of the doubt. Well, how fast do people pop up in those times and do it just like they do with cops? Well, most people in the stadium are good. Where are those good people when they out here calling players on the field racial slurs? They can't even reach in their phones and text the phone number to get somebody kicked out half the time when that stuff happens. Like, where are they, right? And so, yeah, a guy like Gundy is going to get the benefit of the doubt. He's going to get it from people who agree with his views. He's going to get it from people who actually don't agree with his views, right? Because in the end, y'all are looking for any reason whatsoever not to say this white man in front of you is a racist while simultaneously acknowledging the presence of racism. Professor named Edward Bonilla Silva worked at Duke. He wrote a book called Racism Without Racists. And that's how this game goes. There's racism somewhere. It just ain't never when it's in front of you, right? It just ain't never the guy that you're talking about. Even if the guy is standing there in a One America News t-shirt and his players say he threatens to send them back to the hood, right? By the end of the day, Oklahoma State's like, yo, let's chill this out. Let's get it called. Let's have them dap up in a video with a player not really looking like it's resolved, with me wondering, where are the other players on this? Where do they stand on this matter? And me thinking, what's going to happen the next time Mike Gundy says, do you want to go back to the hood? Because I'm sorry, guys. I have a hard time believing he just going to turn into a new dude overnight. All right, so the NBA, they're trying to figure out how to get this thing going in Orlando. Got to be honest with you, the plan doesn't seem great. I don't blame them for trying to come up with a plan, right? And this is important before we get to the other stuff. I don't know if you've seen this. Cases, they popping down there in Florida. It's turning into a thing. Like, it's going to be a hassle. I've been talking to media people about all the difficulty that they'll have if they want to try to cover this. We're seeing what's happening in college football with all these guys showing up and testing positive and how they got to figure out what exactly it is that they are going to do. But if they don't play this season, then the owners can reopen that collective bargaining agreement and they are going to come to bring the hammer to the players. And remember, they got that CBA done with some peace when this came around, but they can go back and redo this in the face of a pandemic. That is not something that the players ultimately want. Like, to me, the consequences for the players of not playing are grave. They are very grave. And I think that if there is any way possible for them to play, then they are going to need to play for their own economic interests. That is my take, right? On the other side, though, we've got guys who believe that right now is not the time to be playing basketball because what's going on in the streets is very, very important. And they don't want to distract people from what's going on in the streets. And I think that that perspective from some players is both ignorant and arrogant. And the reason I say that it's arrogant is, number one, whole world can't take their eyes off us, baby. Once we start bouncing that ball, we're the only thing that's going to matter. Not really how the world works. That's number one. Number two, the ignorant part to me is the idea, and I don't know who exactly they're talking about. Maybe they think they're talking about these well-meaning white folks. Maybe they're talking about black people. But this idea that if basketball is going on, people won't be able to concentrate on what's going on in these streets is absurd, right? Like, if you feel that way, how about this? How about you come and you play basketball and tell people not to watch you play basketball, right? Tell them how important it's not. Tell them to get out in the streets, whatever it is. But I don't believe that there will be any relationship between the NBA returning and the interest in what's going on in these streets, because what's going on in these streets exists independently. What's going on in these streets is bigger than the NBA. It's bigger than the NFL. It's bigger than baseball, all of this stuff. And it is impossible for me to not look at this as being directly insulting to black people and the assumption that somehow black people can't focus on two things at one time. And I say that because I ain't seen one damn person say this about baseball. I ain't seen one person make the point that baseball talking about coming back and that's going to take eyeballs away from the larger issue. And I've had people say, well, you know, they're like, no, it's not about black people. They're talking about these well-meaning white people. What, you think the well-meaning white people don't watch baseball? Baseball have a game on every damn day if you root for a team. You telling me that that won't be more distracting? Or you telling me that people aren't capable of being like, no, I won't watch the basketball game today. There's something else going on. You telling me people can't do that? Like, is that really what you expect me to believe, right? So, no, if I'll say this also, if any individual player wants to do like Maya Moore, right? And say, not playing this year. I got something else I'm going to go focus on. And then goes and does it. You ain't going to hear no complaint from me. If a player says, yo, I'm just not in the right mind frame right now and doesn't want to play, I will understand too. The argument that the whole NBA shouldn't play because people will be distracted. That's stupid. That's stupid. And I admit it doesn't help that what I think is a stupid idea has as one of its greatest champions, Kyrie Irving and Dwight Howard. Now, guys, I understand that sometimes you get wonderful, unlikely messengers who can carry everybody to where they need to go. I get that. You get that. We get that. We all get that. Okay. I'm not following Kyrie into no damn revolution, man. I'm not doing that. I ain't following Dwight Howard nowhere. And I damn sure ain't following Dwight Howard nowhere when neither he nor his agent bothered to edit that damn statement that he put out. How many red underlines were there? Like, when you did that, that thing had to look like a rainbow. What are you talking about? What are you doing? And this is not respectability politics or anything like that. This is basic professionalism. If you're going to make this kind of statement about how you feel about the world, edit it. If you're his agent, do you care about him? If you do, edit it for him. There's no way in the world that Dwight Howard was my client and I got a hold of that I wouldn't edit that. My guy Lance edits stuff for me when I send it across. Like, that's what you do. You look out. Next thing you know, Dwight out here, it didn't make any sense, but he gonna be at the front. And then there's Kyrie Irving, right? And, you know, Kyrie said the thing about, you know, I'm not here with this systemic racism. Something's fishy about this. What? He's totally Kyrie. He's totally Kyrie. In fact, Gabe, I'm going to tell you how Kyrie he is. And the audience is just going to be left out. You ready?
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
All I'm saying is, he's still Kyrie. He didn't stop being Kyrie. He's still Kyrie. That's it. And yes, I get to laugh at the idea that Kyrie's the one at the front of the room. I get to laugh at the idea that there were dozens of players like, nah. I want to hear what Kyrie got to say. Yes. I get to laugh at you about this. And I get to laugh at the thought of Chris Paul being like, are y'all serious? The fact that he's been in the league for 9 years now, he's a vet. Like, I imagine that most of those guys that were in there are young guys, and Dwight Howard, who's always young at heart, right? Like, I imagine that those are the guys who were listening to him because he put himself out front and was like, yo, let's do this. He got this job, you know, this position with the union. I don't know if anybody ran against him, right? But he got this vice president position in the union. So, like, I could see a player of Kyrie's level of stardom and with his level of experience being the guy that people then go listen to. Hey, I mean, there were a couple of vets, like for real vets on the call, though I think they was probably spying just to make sure that, you know, he wasn't messing nothing up for nobody else. But again, if the guys don't think it's safe to play because of the virus, I'm with it. If anybody individually decides that they want to dedicate themselves to a larger cause, I'm with it. If people, for whatever reason, just don't feel like they can do it right now, I'm with it. I have no evidence that NBA basketball is going to take away from the larger cause that's out here in these streets. I just don't see it. I don't think that is what is going to happen. And again, I am insulted, I feel, by the idea that we the only people out here that you think you got to talk to like this. The only people that you feel like you got to, that you legitimately believe. They're like, oh, no. Their eyeballs are going to be turned away. They'll never focus. Like, this feels a whole lot like, you want to hide something from a black person, put it in a book. You know what I mean? Like, that's what this all feels like to me. That's what this all sounds like to me. And I'm not here for it. Either way it goes, even if it would distract from what's going on outside, these cats got to figure out what they're going to do with this money. Cause Kyrie got all the money in the world, right? He got that Nike money. He got that, you know, these huge max contracts that he's got and everything else. It's easy for him to be like, I'll give it all up to go. Whole lot of cats out here, man, that need this bread. A whole lot of cats that ain't been able to stack for no future or anything like that. And you're going to be like, let's all burn it down. No, if I hear that from somebody on a low level, all right, I'll give it some credence. From the guy that's got hundreds of millions of dollars in his bank account? Nope. I just stop and remember that's Kyrie Irving. And I want to stop and say this one thing, because I should have done this earlier, but I don't want to disparage these guys because they mean well. You know, like I don't want to look at guys who really want to do something and then call them a bunch of big dummies. I don't want to do that. But Kyrie didn't stop being Kyrie. Like, I heard people say that, you know, you got to separate the message from the messenger. No, you don't. That's the whole point of credibility. The whole point of credibility is to help you when you've got a message. I will not be blamed for his lack of credibility. You will not require me to indulge him with his lack of credit. You're not going to do that. That's preposterous, right? You said all that other crazy stuff, and now you want me to listen to you because it's serious? No, guys, this time it's serious. No, this time it's Kyrie. Last time it was Kyrie, right? So we get to look at you funny as a result. And I'm glad, at least on some level, that he seems to think that this is really important. I just don't think skipping out on a season that a lot of dudes need to eat is the way to go about it. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, it has finally happened. When I was on a television show called Highly Questionable for a while, we talked about this for a while, and I'm like, when are we going to get the Black Bachelor? We finally got the Black Bachelor, Gabe. We got him. His name is Matt James. He played football at Wake Forest. Gotta say, new Bachelor. He reminds me a whole lot of all the other bachelors. Is it just me? He seems to fit the exact same profile.
Former athlete. Yeah. Lives in the city. There's some action shots of him jogging around said city.
He does free food tours for low-income elementary school students in New York City. That's very nice of him. He says he's proud to be the first Black Bachelor. We are not going to talk about you in February, my brother. No disrespect. He seems to be like a guy that works in the New York, you know, stuff. Okay, he's at the Black Lives Matter rally. He's doing that, all of that stuff. He's friends with some dude named Tyler Cameron that was on The Bachelorette. Here's Matt walking through the village with his white best friend wearing some really tight pants. No shade to the dude, but it seems pretty clear that, like, they basically got a bachelor that's just like all the other bachelors. He just happens to be Black. That's him. Hey, man, and if that's the life he lives, here's a picture of him. Oh, he's a herb. He out here at a golf course with no shirt on carrying his bag. But okay, so it appears that his job is giving the food tours. Okay, that's what's up. That's good. Nice guy. Giving back to the community. All of that. Yeah, so that's who we got. This is the new Black Bachelor who is basically like all the other bachelors. That's who we got. Now, I know a lot of people have made it like a social cause of sorts to get us the Black Bachelor. You know, like they looked at the show and they saw it and they're just like, how come a Black man can't never be the Bachelor? And I think that that was a fair thing to bring up. And I think that even if ABC has not said so out loud, quietly, you would say that the concern is that they were afraid that white people would not watch the Black Bachelor. Right? That's their explanation basically for everything else that Black people ain't doing on screen, is they don't believe that white people will watch this sort of thing. Right? That's probably why we have not had the Black Bachelor. And now we have the Black Bachelor. And I gotta say, now that he's here, I don't blame ABC for not having a Black Bachelor previously. Cause let me tell you something, brother. All I see in the end are poor outcomes for all parties involved.
Poor outcomes? You don't think he's about to find the sweetheart? You mean to tell me that those relationships don't end in happiness every time?
Look, let's stop and think about this for a second, right? Okay. If there is a third rail issue in American society, it is interracial love. Except that's not really what the third rail issue is. The third rail issue is Black men dating, sleeping with, marrying white women. Right? That right there is what it comes down to. That's what the situation is. Now, in terms of viewership, I don't think The Bachelor will be that affected. I saw something yesterday that said that one third of The Bachelor's viewers are men. One third of The Bachelor's viewers are men. I am guessing that a significant number of those men are with their significant others watching The Bachelor, right? That's my guess. Like, I don't know how many men are just sitting around watching it by themselves. Okay. I do not believe, this is my hypothesis, there'll be some exceptions, but I do not believe that the women watching The Bachelor will have a problem with the idea of there being a Black Bachelor. I don't think so. But those dudes, oh, they the ones that's not here for it. Not all of them, not saying all of them, but I am saying a lot. And I'm not going to ask you to tell on yourselves out loud on this one, okay? I'm just letting you know, I know people. And you know why I know people? Because I have lots of white friends. Okay. And what I have learned in my travels, or what I have been told in my travels, and if I am incorrect, you can let me know. White men often aren't so happy to find out that a white woman that they are dating used to date Black men. Not really here for that. Kind of makes them uncomfortable. Not their bag. And again, this whole thing is not about interracial love. It's about Black men and white women. We know this. We got history to back this up. This is what it comes down to, right? So how many episodes before some of these white dudes are like, nah, I'm just not watching this anymore. Why not? I'm just not watching it anymore. How long is it going to be for them cats are like, nah, I've had enough. Come on, baby. We watch The Bachelor every week. I've watched The Bachelor for 10 years and now I'm out, right? Why don't you want to watch this season? Cause I don't, right? Here's where we are. And by the way, if you want a little evidence to indicate that I'm making some sense about this one, go look at the hostility that white men have toward the Kardashians. Go just observe that. The hostility they have in particular toward Kim. And Kim, who most of us widely believe is a very, very, very attractive woman, right? And very attractive in ways that white dudes can appreciate. Because normally when it's a white woman that's a little bit built like a black woman, white folks can't get enough, right? You don't really hear white dudes in public talk about Kim Kardashian in that same way, do you? This is where it goes. So I think their ratings will probably still be okay because the core audience is not offended by this. It's that secondary audience that's offended by this. And it's entirely possible that now they will have an increase in black women who now watch The Bachelor because this has happened. You can see that, right? So Gabe, we got a black bachelor. What is the pool of potential choices for The Bachelor? The roses. What do you think that crew is going to look like? You think they're going to add more black people to it?
I'm not so up on The Bachelor to know how diverse the pool they're choosing from is.
Not. Well, it starts off, as I understand it, a little diverse at the beginning, but it don't stay that way for long.
Essentially because it's all white bachelor men.
Yes. Yeah. It's always a couple from all around the rainbow, right? That's always a couple. And then a couple, you let it go about a month. And then next thing you know, it just look like a bunch of white folks. Like, and not always, like Rachel Lindsay, she made it, you know, very far. She became the bachelorette that one time, but that's how that goes. I'm just going to make this point. Ain't been one person yet that became a contestant on The Bachelor because he was looking for his Nubian princess. Not one person went on The Bachelor looking for a black woman. Never happened. Maybe you could end up with one, but ain't nobody really gone on The Bachelor looking for it. Hasn't happened. Okay. Therefore, I find it highly unlikely that our guy, Matt James, is showing up on The Bachelor looking for a black woman. Maybe he ends up with one, but that's not why he's there. All right. How you think it's going to go over with some of these black women who are now watching The Bachelor who had not watched it before if this dude just winds up tossing all the Nubian goddesses off of there? I feel like the producers are going to have a chat with him. Like, you sure you don't want to let Keisha stay? Like just for another episode? I think it might be a good idea for you if you do that. Now, I don't know this part. Somebody else have to tell me, but I imagine because the way they got it set up that you're going to have like the ladies hanging out with each other. You know what I mean? And they probably get them like talking about each other at different points. That could get very, very, very awkward. People often say things that they don't realize they are saying. Like the first time we get a, why are you so aggressive? This whole thing can go away. This whole thing could go bad. I'm looking forward to the home visit. Although I did see that my man, his mother is white. So the home visit isn't going to be nearly as much fun as I thought it might be given the circumstances. I'm rooting for chaos. Totally rooting for chaos. I say all that to say I understand why ABC had not done this before. That's my ultimate point. All I see in this is a lot of stress. All I see in this is a lot of moving parts. And for me, what I see in this is a lot of jokes. Jokes. Are we going to have to do a game? Are we going to have to do Bachelor updates for?
I don't know how much time I'm going to be investing in the actual show itself, but I'm sure we can get some good recaps going.
Damn, if I have to watch that. If I have to watch that. Oh, man. But nah, man, I'm just saying, me and Dominique were doing HQ yesterday. We just couldn't stop laughing at all things Black Bachelor. Like everything possible, everything that could potentially happen. And all I can see is a whole lot of people being mad. Like in the end, it's just going to be a whole lot of mad people for a marriage that ain't going to last.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from security.
I'm Andy Greenberg, and I'm a senior writer for Wired magazine, and I write about cybersecurity. And I wrote this story about a new spy technique developed by security researchers in Israel at the Ben-Gurion University of the Negev and the Weizmann Institute of Science. And they found that they could eavesdrop on conversations inside of a room from hundreds of feet away outside of the building by pointing a telescope through the window of that room from a long distance away. They can use a telescope with an electro-optical sensor to look through the window and watch the tiny, tiny vibrations of a light bulb inside of that room. And by detecting the tiny changes in the light emitted from that bulb that show its vibrations, they can pick up the sounds of a conversation in the room. And this is a pretty powerful spy technique because not only can you do it from a long distance through a closed window, but there don't have to be any, you know, hacked devices in the room. This is not like trying to hack someone's cell phone to listen to the conversations. You don't have to shine a laser into the room, which is an older technique that, you know, people would bounce a laser off the window of a room to detect the vibrations on the window pane. This is totally passive, and there's really no sign for anyone in the room that they're being spied on. And yet the researchers were able to pick up the entire contents of conversations well enough that they could, for instance, like put the recording that they made of the conversation into a speech to text transcription engine and, you know, come up with an actual transcription of the conversation, or use Shazam to detect the music being played inside the room. So this is a pretty powerful technique, and I expect that it's one that we may see law enforcement or intelligence agencies start to use against at least, you know, high value targets in years to come.
I'm never turning my light on again. Gabe, we can never turn our lights on again. Like, it works with light bulbs. So, like, if I use a candle, I won't have these problems?
If you use a candle, you can rest assured that they're not going to be able to read the vibrations.
All right, time to order some candles. That's that. It's going to be looking like a seance in here all the time. I'm always going to be ready to start doing some yoga.
Talk about some next level of surveillance.
I'm never turning my light on again.
All right, Bomani, so this next one comes from entertainment.
Jordan Coley for The New Yorker. Hollywood is perhaps one of the last places to look for inspiration in times of crisis. Still, the celebrity response to the societal storm that has dominated our minds and screens for the last 4 months has felt particularly unhinged. Last Thursday, a new initiative bluntly titled I Take Responsibility shared a 2-minute video featuring a coalition of white actors and entertainers asserting their culpability in perpetuating anti-black racism. Filmed in a somber black and white and scored with saccharine piano, the spot shows Sarah Paulson, Stanley Tucci, Kesha, and others vowing no longer to turn a blind eye. The website for the initiative allows visitors to decide which racist vice they feel most guilty of, like not being inclusive or saying racism doesn't exist, and allows them to, quote, make it better today by pledging to do things like donate to families affected by racism, that is. The current cultural moment is one whose urgency feels particularly ill-suited to the sort of vapid pageantry that typically makes up the socially conscious arm of a celebrity's PR repertoire. Still, one would hope that among the faction of highly followed and highly influential who are jumping to post black squares for hashtag Blackout Tuesday, there are some who could use their visibility to do more. And some have. Throughout the coronavirus pandemic, and now in the wake of the George Floyd murder, smaller and independent artists have used their reach to amplify the work of organizers and to publicize bail funds to donate to in support of the many protesters who have been brutalized and arrested in cities across the country. Even some more popular figures like Star Wars' John Boyega and Chicago rapper No Name have been very unequivocal in disparaging systemic racism and galvanizing their respective followings. In recent weeks, social justice organizers and mutual aid fund administrators have seen a spike in support from plain old non-celebrity regular people, too. Many folks online have posted receipts of their donations and challenged friends in their network to match them. These examples show what can happen if social media platforms are treated less like PR buildouts and more like the powerful communication channels and resource vectors that they are. A hashtag Black Lives Matter post on Jennifer Lopez's Instagram page reaches an audience larger than most of regional television stations. And although reposting an aerial video of a street mural is nice, it lacks the efficacy of a bail fund link to free those arrested while marching across it.
Look, man, this stuff can only be effective if it's personal. Like, that's the only way. The thing about social media is it is intended to be social. It is effective for famous people, not as a way to send out press releases, but if they're actually trying to make a legitimate connection. Now, what I think a problem a lot of these people are going to have is you can't just turn your social media feed personal in a drop of a dime. Right. Like if you have not established that kind of trust in that space, then you can't really do it in that way. You just can't. But again, the key to this is sincerity. And I think what's going to be important is people got to own things that they've done and not just the I have been complicit as a broad statement, because that broad statement doesn't do anything for me personally. Like I've been complicit. What do you think you've been complicit about? How do you think that you've been complicit? Like, really think about it. You know what I mean? Like, I ain't necessarily like making these people answer for me or begging for them to answer to me or something like this, but I'm just, there are obviously limitations to what's going to happen on in the social media space and by famous people. But what famous people are going to be able to do is they're going to be able to empower the people in the streets that are actually doing the real work, right? Like, the famous people should not be the stars of this. They should not be the most important people in this, but they can in various ways empower the folks that are on the ground trying to make things happen. And that I honestly think is the best way that they can go about doing this, not something that makes you the center of it, right? So the I have been complicit video, in theory, that stuff is cool, right? But like, I personally, I don't need you to apologize to me for this stuff, but you're going to need to understand that this is a long run project. This is grinding it out. This is what it's going to take. Like, my daddy talks about buying gas. He's like, think about buying gas is and saving money buying gas. He's like, that's a long-term project. You only save like 75 cents here, there, you know, a couple cents here on this, but it's about how much money you stack up all the way to the end. Otherwise, you just get gas wherever you go. So unless you're in it to do this for a long time, then you're just going to buy gas anywhere. And if you're going to try to really save some money on this, you're going to have to focus on doing this for a very, very long time. And I do hope all those people understand that.
All right, this next one comes from tech.
This is Jeffrey Fowler, tech columnist with the Washington Post. It's been a big week for PR stunts about facial recognition technology and racial justice. Facial recognition lets computers identify people from photos and video and has been proven to be less good at identifying minorities and women. But that hasn't stopped police from adopting this tech in dozens of cities. So last week, you might have heard that IBM, Amazon, and Microsoft all announced they wouldn't sell facial recognition tech to police, at least not for a while. Sounds good, right? Well, hold on. Those PR stunts alone don't do much to stop police from using this technology. IBM, Amazon, and Microsoft aren't even the major players selling this tech to police. It's mostly smaller companies you've never heard about. Where big companies like Microsoft are influential is in getting laws passed. And so far, their actual record puts them at odds with organizations like Color of Change and the NAACP. Civil rights groups say we need an all-out ban on government use of facial recognition. But big tech companies don't want that. Earlier this month, Microsoft was touting its support of Black Lives Matter, even as it was fighting some 65 different civil rights and privacy groups over a potential law in California that fell pretty far short of a ban. Now it's pushing for similar federal laws. Silicon Valley wants to claim it supports Black Lives Matter, but we need to hold them to it. Facial recognition has the possibility to supercharge police in a way that could disproportionately impact people of color through misidentification or just more surveillance of minority communities.
And y'all don't want to wear no mask.
Does this constitute as virtue signaling from the tech companies, given that they're like making these big PR statements, but then not backing it up with any sort of future impact that Jeffrey describes?
No, it absolutely. Look, here's my thing. If they're like, yeah, we're just going to stop for a year. No, man, they sold out on this and people just took a while before they got hip to it. But they're in on this. And so I don't know what the people can do can get them out of it. But yo, we have sold ourselves to these people, man. Put your mask on just for this. Like, it's crazy, right? Like, they just how much went on the low and we just didn't have any idea about it. No, if you think you need to stop this for a year, then you need to stop this all the time. Hard stop.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. So for our social segment this week, you had the idea asking people to leave voicemails from their kids doing things about the house that are making them tired of it, causing too much destruction. What was the motivation behind this segment?
Honestly, man, I just got friends that's got teenagers that they wish they could fight, but they can't. And I just imagine, man, y'all stuck up in there with these people that's driving y'all crazy. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, I just figure y'all need a place to vent.
Well, we're a safe space. And this is the place for you. Our first, the guy didn't leave his name, but he's from Columbus, Ohio.
I'll put it this way. I walked outside this morning. I got off of a meeting, came out back to find my six-year-old, and I came out to the site of several open and empty golf ball boxes, and I didn't bat an eye. And so I looked around, and I found him, and he was stirring one of those big Home Depot pickle buckets, and I could smell citronella oil. And I said, "What you got there, pal?" And in this bucket, he had water from the rain barrel, an entire bag of grass seed, some of the clay beads that my wife uses to pot her plants, and every single golf ball that I own, and God knows how much citronella oil. And he was just stirring it, saying that he was doing an experiment. And I didn't even bat an eye, because that's probably one of the sanest things he's done since we went into quarantine. So I helped him finish his experiment. And then we dumped it out, and I made him wash the golf balls.
That man is at wit's end. He said, "That's the sadist. He has pushed the others out of his mind. We wanted the better ones." He's like, "This is all I can stand to tell you right now."
You know what? Keep going with your experiment.
Yes. This is not as bad as it could be.
This is totally normal. Finish up your experiment, but also, too, wash all the golf balls. Cause that was my thinking. I was like, I wonder how the golf balls are going to be affected in all this. Cause I'm not a golfer myself.
Those things are cheap.
So you better wash those golf balls. Cause I'm trying to use those next week.
Yes. Yes.
There's one thing you can do in quarantine, I guess, with your team is play, go play golf.
That's right.
Damn kids and their experiments now. All right. This next one comes from Rob in Harlem.
During quarantine, it's been me and my wife, and we got a 9-month-old son at home, right? And he has been a handful. So, the other weekend, you know, we got a little back patio, ground level brownstone. It's about 89 degrees out. So we said, "Yeah, let's get a kiddie pool going." So we get him in the pool, we do the pool thing. It was great. Figure sun shining, why not split the margaritas? We do that. I get a cup, my wife gets a cup. So pool time ends, and we pull him out, and you know, pull some diaper off and get him in a towel, right? And then also my wife goes, "Ah, feel something warm." I'm sitting in the chair like, "What?" Next thing I know, we see a nice stream on a perfect arc that comes from out the towel down into her cup of margarita. And I just fell out. Normally she's a patient one, but that was her last straw.
The kid peed in a margarita?
What are the odds of that? Talk about accuracy.
Just can't think of anything appropriate to say right now. Like, everything that I'm thinking right now is from a different era of child rearing that, you know, probably not be. Wow.
The reaction from him sounds like he wasn't so much as angry as he was either impressed or shocked.
Well, it was in her margarita. So, like, he, okay. Can I be honest?
Please do.
No disrespect, Rob. And I understand kids will be kids. You got to feel like somewhere along the way you failed, right? Like, your kid is out here peeing in his mama's margarita. Like, I'm just saying that if that kid was at my house and he peed in my margarita, my assumption would be that you guys are mediocre parents. Now, I don't know if that would be fair because people have told me that parenting is a lot harder than it looks. I'm just saying, you can't just shrug it off if your kid's out here pissing in people's drinks. You got to fix that. Like, there needs to be some deprogramming that goes on. Send him off somewhere.
That's a we can't have nice things moment.
I'm just saying, if you can't scream at your kid for pissing in somebody's drink, I don't know when you can. Like, he's like, "My wife lost her patience." That shouldn't even been about patience. She could have been as calm as she wanted. This is some things that you're going to get screamed at for.
Oh, my God. All right, this last one, this is from G in Las Vegas.
My son decided it would be a good idea that he wanted to do his laundry. But he didn't complete it because he fell asleep, air quotes. So the next day we had to get up and leave, and he decided he didn't want to look for any of his old clothes. He went to go try to get the new clothes out the washing machine. pulled them out, soaking wet, put them on, and walked out the door. Only until later I found out we were in the car. I said, yo, man, why are your pants wet? Oh, because I pulled them out the washing machine. Didn't even put them in the dryer. You ever just want to fight your own kids, man? It's one of those kind of moments.
I need to know how old this kid was.
It sounded like a teenager. This is one of those teachable moments when it's like, all right, before kids get to college, they've got to know how to do their own laundry. Because once you're not there, they're going to have to do it for themselves.
Absolutely.
Let him go out the house, wet jeans on, to teach him a lesson.
And apparently he wasn't hip to game until it was too late. When you're putting on wet clothes as a kid, this doesn't seem like a bad idea to you?
Wet clothes are just about the most uncomfortable thing.
I'd be afraid of wearing wet clothes into my parents' car. I have to say, what I am learning from these stories is, as the paradigm of child rearing has changed, kids are far more likely to do some of the dumbest things. Because under a different paradigm of child rearing, I assure you, no kid old enough to wash those clothes would dare sit his wet behind down in the car seats.
Because of the quarantine and because of kids being around more often and parents being the ones who watch said kids, because potentially before they were doing these crazy things at school, potentially before doing these crazy things at daycare, what have you, being around them more. Are they doing more crazy things because you're around them more, or are they doing more crazy things because they're in quarantine?
Or the things just feel crazier, right, because you're in the space. Gabe, this boy said he washed clothes, didn't dry them, and then just pulled the clothes out of the washing machine. He know the dryer there for a reason. He knew the clothes wasn't dry. I'm team dad on this, and I'm saying, and I guess I don't know, I don't have these kids. Like, people tell me all the dumb things that their teenagers do, right? Like, even if they're not dumb teenagers, but keep an eye on that boy. I'm just telling you right now, keep an eye on that boy. It sounds like he's capable of like things that aren't as dumb that are still pretty stupid. No disrespect. That's teenagers though. Remember, for real though, Gabe, like everybody I know that's got the teenagers. I was over at a buddy of mine's house one day. He's got a teenager. He's like 19 or 20. And I just remember when somebody had him call the boy Darren. His name's not Darren. I was just like, yo, so what's going on? He's like, psh. Darren's dumbass. Like, that's where teenagers bring you to the point. You're like, yo, what are you, dummy? What are you doing? But you can't say that no more. You can't. By the way, did he spend the whole day in the wet clothes? Wow. I had no idea that what I thought would be a fun segment would unfortunately lead to me judging the parental skills and the intellectual fortitude of people and their children. I can't imagine what my mother would do if I did something that stupid. I just can't imagine her reaction, her thought process. I know, you remember, my brother's 13 years older than me. I know what my brother, think about my brother is. My brother, the whole like, hey, don't say that stupid, but it's stupid. Like, that's him. He was like, no, that was stupid. Like, you need to know that was stupid. He wouldn't be mean about it. He wouldn't be a jerk about it. But fact is, that's stupid. Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Andy Greenberg of Wired. Check out his story on the so-called lamp phone. They can listen to you by checking out your lamps in your house. Check that at wired.com. Also, thank you to Jordan Coley of The New Yorker. Check out his story on the limits of celebrity activism at newyorker.com. And thanks to Jeffrey Fowler of The Washington Post. Check out his story on IBM, Amazon, and Microsoft vowing to stop using facial recognition. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.